Mergers and acquisitions may help stockholders, but do they hurt American jobs? From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. More than 8 months since Democrats were delivered a Republican president, Republican House and Republican Senate, some prominent Democrats in the House and Senate have launched a kind of mini New Deal aimed at improving the lives of workers. The rhetoric surrounding this echoes some of the results of our Marketplace Edison Research polling, which had found that across the board, Americans feel the economic system is rigged against them. Here to discuss what New York Senator Charles Schumer and others are proposing is Felicia Wong, president and CEO of the nonprofit Roosevelt Institute in New York. Felicia, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, David.
Okay, so the proposal here, crack down on drug prices. Pharma companies will say that will hurt their research and development, but you could see how that might be a crowd pleaser. But we also have this idea of retraining. How would that work? It's money to employers?
The Democrats, they say they want to close the skills gap in order to create 10 million new jobs. But really what I'd like is for the Democrats to link the first thing they rolled out, which is this focus on monopoly power, this imbalance of power, more directly to jobs. Then I think you'd see the skills focus also mapped with a few other things, including coming out more strongly for unions and more about jobs investments. Then I think you'd see a really robust jobs package.
All right, let's go to part three, third leg of this proposal from New York Senator Charles Schumer. The Democrats think that hardworking Americans will be excited by the idea of blocking some mergers and acquisitions or maybe breaking up some big companies?
To my mind, it's really the most important piece of the agenda. When you've got, you know, just a few big companies dominating markets, they're able to block small and medium-sized companies from competing on the merits. And so that's not just bad for consumers, it's really bad for workers. And ultimately, I'd argue that it's bad for our democracy. I think they're going to probably lose some corporate political donations over this. But I would like to believe that they're doing it anyway because it's actually what Americans want.
Well, it's actually what Americans want, you say. I look at this and wonder if the Democrats will have to make the connection. I mean, when I'm out reporting, the first thing, and second thing, third thing I hear from people is not companies are too big.
That's a lot of what we can also expect in the next, you know, weeks and months, making the connection that not only is monopoly bad for consumers, but it's also bad for workers and it's bad for voters. This is really one of the reasons we're seeing record corporate profits and record high long-term unemployment.
All right. Always good to talk to Felicia Wong, president and CEO of the Roosevelt Institute, nonpartisan think tank in New York. Thank you very much.
Thanks, David.
As we just heard, the price of pharmaceuticals is something that Democrats plan to attack in their bid to court working Americans. And it's not just brand name drugs. Even the price of some generic drugs are rising. This week, we'll be looking at generic drugs, how they were first approved, and what's worked and not worked for medicines that are old enough so that competitors are allowed to copy the formula. From our help desk at WHYY, Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein reports.
In the late 1970s, the generic drug scene was, well, it was sketchy. While generics were legal, proving them to be safe and effective was tough. Getting them to the consumer was even tougher. Pharmacist George George remembers it for the Wild West that it was.
There would be sales reps showing up in the summertime at an independent drugstore in any town USA selling bottles of penicillin out of the trunks of their cars, you know, in 100-degree heat.
Regulation of generics began taking shape in the 1960s, but that didn't help manufacturers much. Bob Billings, a consultant with the Generic Manufacturers Trade Group, says into the 80s, companies weren't sure how long it would take to get approval or even what exactly had to be submitted to get that approval.
It's like going on a trip and you don't have a road map. So you just have to sort of hope that you choose the right roads. You may end up choosing a wrong path and it could take a long time to get there.
The trouble getting generics to market at that time helped explain why only about a third of top-selling brand-name drugs had any generic competition, even though their patents had expired. To do something about the growing price of drugs, Congress passed a bill now known as the Hatch-Waxman Act that laid out exactly what companies needed for approval and that this process would take the FDA just 6 months. President Ronald Reagan hailed the legislation as a winner, especially for older Americans.
Senior citizens require more medication than any other segment of our society. I speak with some authority on that. With this bill, elderly Americans will have access to safe and effective drugs at the lowest possible cost.
The bill immediately shook up the industry. Billings says within a year of passage, generic manufacturers submitted 1,000 applications. For branded companies, they got longer patent protections for their new drugs, a benefit, he said, they've maximized.
Some were 30 days, some were 40 days, many were 3 or 4 years. I just did a real quick adding up of that and got over 1,100 years of patent term extensions for brand products since Hatch-Waxman came into being.
Back in 1984, Reagan predicted the bill would save $1 billion over the next decade. In June, the FDA reported generics saved the U.S. more than $1.5 trillion since 2007. As designed, Hatch-Waxman created pharmaceutical competition like we've never seen. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
We're also watching for the procedural vote set for the Senate on Obamacare repeal later today. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.